Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Two full days, that's it, talking about the quarterback situation. After that, we will know who the quarterback is, and that'll begin a whole new conversation tomorrow night right here on the Team 980, along with our sister station, 106.7 The Fan. Grant Paulson and Danny Ruhier will be hosting night one of the draft. You'll hear everything, every pick that happens in the first round, including what Washington decides to do at number two, and who knows, maybe what they decide to do later in the first round as well. Grant, of course, part of Grant and Danny. 2 o'clock weekdays on 106.7 The Fan, and Grant joins me right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. So we'll get to the draft here in a moment, but I want to start with you on the game last night at Madison Square Garden. When it comes to any hope that you may have had about the Caps winning the series or at least making it a long series, a long competitive series, was the 4-3 loss last night encouraging to that end or not?
I would say discouraging to that end. I think any path to me feeling like they could stun the Rangers required probably winning one of two in Madison Square Garden and taking control of at least home ice in the series, putting a little pressure on New York. They get to, you know, get on the train now, come down to D.C. a little free and easy, right? But I'm not sitting here disappointed in saying, oh, I think they're going to get swept, or if it's only five games, it's a disaster. I think the experience they're getting for their young guys like McMichael, who scored last night, Hendricks LaPierre, who was fantastic, is tremendous. And I still do think, remember, they were down 0-2, albeit in a couple of home games against Columbus. The Columbus Blue Jackets. when they won the cup in 2018 in the first round. So they've got to win Friday night. If they can do that, I think they still have a chance to, you know, force this series to six games or so. But the Rangers are really good, man. If they don't stay out of the box, you're not going to beat them. They're special teams. They're better on the power play. They're better on the penalty kill. They're obviously better at even strength. But really, special teams in general was going to be the theme to the series. And the Caps parade to the penalty box has been ridiculous.
You know, I thought about that, you know, 2018 run. They lost the first two games in overtime, I believe, to Columbus at home. And weren't they down and also in an overtime game in game three and on the verge of going down 3-0? I think they were.
They were. In fact, their goal in that third game was a really dirty kind of fortuitous bounce. The puck hit Lars Eller, who was crashing the net in the boot, and went in. And they won an overtime game on the road. But, yeah, I think there was even a post hit behind their goalie right before that, if memory serves. So they were inches away from being down 3-0. They get back in the series 2-1, and the rest, as they say, is history.
I remember, Grant, where I was watching that game. I was in Bloomington, Indiana, taking my youngest son on a college trip, and the college, you know, tour started the next day. And we sat in a bar in Bloomington, which is a lovely kind of college town, and watched that game. All right, explain to me how the Panarin hit on Oshie. We go to commercial, we come back, and the Rangers are on the power play. How did that happen?
So a couple of things. First of all, I can't explain why it wasn't a penalty. I think it absolutely should have been. The two players in question, Panarin and Oshie, had been at each other's throats really all game long, which to me adds to the suggestion that there was a little malice and some animosity in the hit. If you remember, only a few minutes before that, Oshie had gotten away with a high stick, incidental and kind of part of the game, but he was not whacking him in the face. He was just kind of playing the puck, trying to stick lift, and he hit him in the face, and he got away with what should have been a high sticking call on Panarin, who was clearly salty. But over a couple of games now, those two guys have several times after the whistle been chirping in each other's face. So it even adds to the suggestion to me, this idea that, well, he was just looking for a clean hit. Oshie, who's had many issues with the upper body, concussions, major back problems on and off the ice, ends up going into the tunnel. How it happened that the Caps go to the kill was the retaliation thereafter, which is fairly common and normal in hockey, that after one of your guys takes a shot like that, you go after someone. But what you often see is, while they'll put, in this case, McMichael in the box, they're going to give Panarin more minutes to serve his penalty so that the aggressing team, in this case the Rangers, the team that started it, ends up having to go a man down. And that wasn't the case at all. It was pretty ridiculous. I think if you want to wipe away the penalty, even though I think that's outrageous, maybe you do that and you say you thought he hit body before head, which I disagree with. But the idea that out of all of that, the Capitals retaliating for a bad shot on one of their oft-injured, oft-concussed players, go to the penalty kill was pretty egregious.
Yeah, it seemed that way. So why is Alex Ovechkin struggling here in the first two games?
Well, they've done a really good job defensively on him. I'm not sure. I was actually trying to text some the smart hockey people about this morning.
I thought you were the smart hockey person. You are for me.
No, I'm like the adults, you know, the guys that I work with at NBC, SW, now Monumental, the Alan Mays and the Brent Johnson types that played in the league. But here's what I think. I think LaViolette, who's got scouting reports on all these guys and a pretty good idea of how they like to operate schematically on the power play, which hasn't changed a lot since he was here, specifically at even strength, some of the tendencies, right? You coach Alex Ovechkin, you know what he likes to do, bringing the puck into the offensive zone. I think they've got a really good report. They've got a really good plan. Certainly on the power play, they've all but taken him out of the equation. They're basically parking a defender at his boots and going 4-on-3 everywhere else, and the Capitals aren't moving the puck enough, in my opinion, to make them pay for it. What I would do is just kind of have Ovi stand in his office as far away from the cage as possible, bring the defender away from, you know, home plate, and then try to basically go 4-on-3. And for whatever reason, they've really tried to make fetch happen, if I could quote a very mediocre movie from a handful of years ago, and try to engage and involve Ovechkin more often maybe than they should. So you also should probably use more second power play time. which I know they don't really like to do. But I give LaViolette credit, and I think defensively they've been great. He had zero shots in the first game, which isn't really that telling. He had seven attempts, five were blocked, two missed the cage. He's got one shot through two games, which isn't going to work.
All right, one more on the hockey, because you kind of alluded to this earlier. So they've got this mix of, you know, age experience, including Stanley Cup finals and Stanley Cup title experience on their team, mixed with a lot of young talent. So was making the playoffs a harbinger of things to come? Is the outlook for next year and beyond that they are a team on the rise, or is it more of a question mark in terms of what happens in the near future?
I think they're a team on the rise, but I would put the caveat that I'm a believer in that they're going to spend some money and be aggressive this offseason. They've had a really complicated financial situation, as they have paid players like Ovechkin and Backstrom and Kuznetsov massive money, and for whatever reason, in two of those three cases, haven't gotten the necessary return. In Backstrom's case, it was health. Kuznetsov was just kind of a mess. But money's off the books now. They're paying some of the freight on Kuzi next year, but that is a few million instead of the $8-plus million you've been paying him. Backstrom's a $9 million guy. They had to pay him this year. But particularly after he left in the first week of the season, I think in his case, you're going to put him on a long-term IR, and that money won't count against you. So that's now found superstar money that you could go find a 30-goal scorer to put on the top line if you want to. Then you've got the development of Connor McMichael, who looks like a legitimate top six player for them for years to come. What we've seen from Hendrix LaPierre, who's currently centering that third line with Pacioretty and Milano, has been a massive leap on the defensive end, more so even than maybe on offense. The growth this year of Alexander Alexiev, Martin Ferravari has been really, really critical. So I'd say they're one or two splash additions away from being pretty good next year, where they're not scratching and clawing to get into the playoffs in the final week, assuming they hit on those decisions, because they have had success with bringing in Dylan Strome and paying him, finding Sonny Milano on the scrap heap. So they've been able to have their cake and eat it too during the rebuild here a little bit.
Grant Paulson joining us, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Caps-Rangers game 3 Friday night at Capital One Arena. You'll hear that game on 106.7 The Fan. And the draft will be right here on the Team 980. Denton and I will be hosting the coverage of the draft Friday night. Thursday night, night one, it'll be Grant and Danny hosting the first round of the draft on both stations, 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. So let's talk some drafts. So you know where I am on quarterback preference, and I'll ask you about yours here in a few minutes. But I am in that mode. You and I have talked about this before. I'm in that mode of being kind of willing for the first time in a long time to give benefit of the doubt. Where are you? What overall kind of constructive mode are you in when it comes to evaluating Adam Peters and company and what they do here?
Yeah, I have my preferences with everything that they do. But in the same way with the coaching search, that I thought hiring a defensive coach was a mistake because, analytically speaking, it hasn't worked in the league in an extended period of time at a high rate. They picked their guy for their reasons, and I got no problem with it. I think they've got a good group of people that are critical thinkers, outside the box thinkers. I think there are still ways to win, even when you shirk convention, even when you go against what is more successful more often. So yeah, whether it was Ben Johnson, who I obviously liked a lot, he completely, I would say, it took his name out of the running and made the whole search a dog and pony show. I still would have gone with a young ascending offensive talent. I would have interviewed more offensive people than they did, which was weird. But I use this just as an example to say, like, Quinn put together a really good staff. They've had a good offseason. They're in a decent place going into the year. I think whether it's my number one choice or not, with quarterback, with head coach, I'll have my choices. But in a way that I wasn't willing to give the Marty Party and Rivera any kind of benefit of the doubt because they hadn't earned it. There was no hardware there. This was, you know, Ron Rivera running a 7-win operation in Carolina. They hired him to come here, and he ran the same 7-win operation. You know, he played the music he'd always been playing, and everyone got upset. You didn't go hire Belichick and make him your coach-centric leader. You went and hired an average head coach who got to the Super Bowl once, when a quarterback had an unbelievable season. And he kind of was the same guy here. So I think you went and got a Super Bowl caliber executive who's won titles as a scout, certainly not in a GM role. I'm a huge Lance Newmark guy. This is a name I've heard for a couple of years as someone who had, you know, been readying for a bigger opportunity. So I trust this front office. And I'm in a place with all four of the quarterbacks at the top of the board, frankly, that whatever they would have done, I would have been fine with. The way I describe it, Kevin, is I have way more concerns with some of them than others, and I have my own board, if you will. But there's nothing they can do tomorrow night, Thursday night, that's going to make me upset.
All right, let's get to your board here in a moment. But, you know, what's been interesting about the last couple of months, part of it is because Washington's selecting number two in a draft that's got a lot of quarterbacks at the top, and Washington having a lot of need at the position. So we're feeling that part of the buildup to the draft. But just in general, there's been so much opinion. You know, less reporting maybe than actual reporting, but some reporting. So much out there. I'm sorry?
No, I totally agree with that. I was just saying, no doubt. I mean, it's
so
wild.
With all that's been out there for the last couple of months, especially specific to what Washington will do or should do, I'm curious if there is a person or are there people out there when it comes to, you know, opining or, you know, quasi-reporting that you believe in that you trust more?
Schefter. That's it.
So what have you learned from Schefter during this process?
He has pretty steadfastly assumed they're going to take Jaden Daniels. I think the betting market, not solely because of Schefter, reflects that. And he also has hedged. He has not reported.
Yeah. See,
I'm big on the difference between saying and reporting. A lot of people don't care about that. He is saying he thinks they're going to take Jaden Daniels. He's got nothing to report. So the question is, where is it coming from? I don't think they're feeding him from inside their war room anything. I don't think Adam Peters is telling him anything, Newmark, Harris. But Schefter is the guy, by far, if you look at this offseason, that they've decided to take the best care of for whatever reason. Nationally, ESPN, he's the guy that has had the majority, the bulk of the news and the information. And that's not just Washington, that's in most places. But where is he getting his intel on Daniels? It could absolutely be from the agent. I would just imagine he's so well connected. It's what other teams are perceiving based on their conversations with the player, the agent, and Washington. And I wouldn't be surprised, right? Schefter's super plugged in with many of Peter's disciples over the years or people
right.
he's worked for. And I think those people probably know his proclivities. They haven't asked him, who are you taking? But you think Kyle Shanahan, as an example, and Adam Peters didn't talk about the quarterbacks and at the top of the draft class last year just in passing, or he doesn't know what he likes in terms of a guy who can run and pass versus just stand in the pocket with center block feet. So I think he's got plenty of information that shouldn't be discounted, even if Peters isn't telling him what he's doing.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And before I get to your board, what do you make of, if it's the pick, why do you think that they end up picking Jaden Daniels if Schefter ends up being right after all of these months and they do it tomorrow night?
It's a great question. I would say, I have not thought of that question. I would say twofold. Number one, he is kind of the dream scenario at his apex that you were looking for in today's National Football League. At the peak of his powers, he is a stressing player for a defensive coordinator and staff and every defensive player on the field who makes you go 11 on 11. It's in a lot of ways what we saw in 2012 when Washington was the number one offense in the NFL, the number one passing offense yards per play, even with a neophyte QB at that time in the NFL. On top of that, though, in addition to, I think, teams kind of close their eyes and imagine the best player on the field every weekend and maybe one of the best playmakers in the league being their quarterback, this is completely speculative, I will say. I get the sense that Dan Quinn really likes Jaden Daniels. I get the sense that the coaching staff really likes Jaden Daniels. And it seems to me like while Dan Quinn's not calling the shots, he's made it very clear every time he's been asked about that he doesn't want to. I do think Peters and Quinn, the reason Quinn became the guy was that they get along. They've got this really good relationship. you know, they see a lot of things eye to eye, but also are going to work side by side. And maybe you're going, all right, it's your first shot at this thing. You really prefer this guy. I like him. Fine. Let's do this thing. That's my guess.
No, I think that's a really good answer, the first part of it. I think you're right about Quinn. But the idea of, you know, just the player that will put the most stress on a defense, not just on game day, but on the days leading up to game day. You know, 11-on-11 football, you know, we understand what that is, and having the quarterback presented and involved in the running game. But I would take it a step further. You know how much I love Daniels. I think they believe that he might be the smoothest as a thrower and pocket presence as well, and that there's a lot they can do with him. But I think the first part of that, and I think the Quinn part, is probably spot on as much as we know. All right, let's get to your preferences. We both think, by the way, let me just make sure I'm clear on this. You do think they'll take Daniels at number two?
I do.
I do too. So who should they take, in your opinion?
I've got a pretty sizable gap between Drake May and Jaden Daniels, and I would take Drake May over Daniels.
Okay, why?
Several reasons. I guess to start, for me, I like the idea for Drake May of the throws that he can make. I think the things that he does poorly are more easily fixable and coachable than some of my concerns with Jaden Daniels. But with Drake May, people talk about him like he had a bad year last year. Now, this is the only player in college football with 9,000 passing and rushing yards the last 2 years without a great supporting cast, oh, by the way, in the ACC. In fact, if you look at the analytics on wins above replacement for quarterback supporting cast, so we're talking receiver, running back, tight ends, O-line on offense, for the past 2 years, Caleb Williams' group was worth 2.5 wins. Jaden Daniels' group was worth 2.2 wins. McCarthy had the best supporting cast at 2.7 wins, other than Bo Nix, believe it or not, at almost 4 wins. Drake May had a minus war from his supporting cast, meaning they hurt him more than they helped him. I think his age, he is 3 years behind Jaden Daniels in terms of football development on the field. He's going to be 22 years old in season. He's 21 now. You're talking about 26 starts as opposed to 55. Is a plus, not a minus. I also think the throws are outrageous. 79 big-time throws is charted by PFF the last 2 years. Since 2020, nobody's had more than 59. One of the first things I look at in young quarterbacks coming out is size at this point. He's massive at 6'4", 230, built in a lab. The big-time throw rate of 8%. The guys at that level in college over the first two rounds the last several years, it's him, Josh Allen, and Justin Fields, who, contrary to popular belief, was a tremendous statistical thrower in college. Only Mahomes dropped back more per game than him. So people talk about, well, it's just the one season. He played really well last year or 2 years, but he threw a lot. And if you look at PFF grade against good competition, Power 5 teams, his was 90. Daniels was 80. Caleb was also 90. Penix was 89. Daniels has been the outlier there, throwing the football against really good competition. So Drake May, to me, is a better athlete than he gets credit for. Over 40 scrambles for first down on third and fourth down the last two seasons. You know, Daniels, as an example, had 22, which I don't hold against him. I'm just using it as context. But I think you design runs for him like Josh Allen in Buffalo on third and fourth and short. You send him off tackle behind pulling guards. I think he is an uber-athletic thrower first, and it's kind of exactly what I salivate about.
Is there something they could do at number two? You've already said you're going to be, you know, you're going to be okay with whatever they do among those, that group of quarterbacks that'll be in the running for number two. But who would make you the most skeptical if they picked him?
Daniels.
Why?
No particular order. Age, late breakout, frame, one read and scramble. I mean, just kind of some of the problem areas generally that worry me. And I get the ceiling and I get the excitement. If they take him, I'm going to also be, if I think about the best case scenario, that's electric in that I'm giddy. But of all of, and I would even throw McCarthy and Penix into the mix, of all of the guys, I would say that I am most concerned about Jaden Daniels moving forward.
So he would not be your number two on the board. So is number two McCarthy? By the way, where do you have Caleb Williams?
Williams, I think, is the best quarterback in the class. Okay. I haven't even studied him too much because I never even thought it was a possibility.
Okay, so Williams, May, and then is it McCarthy next?
That's tough. So I would say I would take McCarthy probably over Daniels right now because it's way safer. If you told me one of those guys ends up being excellent, I don't think it's McCarthy. I don't think his ceiling is to be a top 10 or 12 quarterback in the league. So am I really going to draft that at two? To be honest with you, I think if I'm taking McCarthy, I have to move down a few picks and do it. I can't take him at number two overall. I think you got to draft ceiling. So even though if I'm betting on one of those players to be really good in 2 years, I'd say McCarthy because there's no real top five in the league ceiling for him. When you're swinging at two, you got to swing for the fences. So if they take a quarterback at two, it should be Daniels. I believe in drafting for ceiling, right? But if you're saying who's a safer bet to be a good quarterback in 2 years, I do think it's McCarthy.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up. Is that the mode you should be in when you've got number two overall and you haven't, you know, and you've got a major need at the position in the way safer mode? And you answered the question, which is no, you shouldn't be. And that would seem
would
to be
Daniels, and I would make Josh Harris aware. Like, we're doing this because if we hit on this player, it's Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, you know, whoever else you want to throw in there eventually, Stroud, Lamar, and this guy, right? But, I mean, we could go through them, but the age, the size, the late breakout, I over-talk about pressure to sack, but the guy, he leaves clean pockets, just things that petrify me and are generally precursors for not making the leap successfully.
It's funny, you and I have had this conversation before, probably off the air, but I actually view Jaden Daniels after Caleb Williams as the safest pick. I view it differently. There are a couple of things that bother me. I'm not completely okay with his frame. That concerns me. His decision-making and the hits that he's taken, many of which came in 2022, there are plenty of examples of him not taking the hits and sidestepping out of bounds before a big hit. That concerns me, of course, because you want your quarterback to be available when you take him number two overall. But in many ways, I think his playmaking ability makes him the safest pick because you'll have that as long as he's healthy. All right. A couple more with Grant Paulson, who's joining us on the show today. Do you think they trade back into the first round? Does it make sense to? How do you think post number two overall plays out on Thursday night?
I actually think they go back up into round one with 36 and 40 and get a left tackle. And I think they should. They have to do everything in their power to make sure that this works with the quarterback. And one of the things I beat up on Rivera and the Martys so hard for last year was they were asking Sam Howell to lead them as a young QB with very little experience. And they spent the offseason not addressing the best possible way to ensure and insulate him to play at a high level. The offensive line. They've done a little more this offseason, but not much. I mean, the guard they went out and signed, Allegretti, has been a backup. I happen to think they're probably right, and he can start at guard. I like that Cosme's come on, and the one big splash move they made was Biotish at $10 million per year. But, I mean, they gave a center $10 million per year under the last regime. It was just the guy who was already here who ended up getting hurt, as you know. So it's not like they have really made the offensive line a major emphasis. If they just sit pat at 36, and bank on the ninth best tackle, eighth best tackle in the country falling into their lap and being ready to go day one, I think that's a really bold, ballsy decision. I'd rather go up, get a guy I really like, start him at left tackle. Whether it's Daniels or May, it doesn't really matter. But Daniels this year played behind a guy that I was told last night by someone's going to be the first left tackle to go in next year's draft, and potentially as many as three first-rounders on his offensive line. Another reason for the breakout this year, I think, in addition to him just getting better, you know, he had two top 20 wide receivers and potentially three first-round offensive linemen on that offense with him. Get him a left tackle. Elevate him. Help him. So I would go back up and do it for sure. You've got all the picks. Use them and solve your biggest need.
Yeah, you know, the Sam Howell thing, I think a lot of what happened to Sam Howell's on Sam Howell, but they certainly did not create the right environment. You know, you mentioned the offensive line. I'll mention the offensive coordinator hire as well. It just turned out to be much too dysfunctional of an environment to have a first-time starting quarterback. What do you think he becomes in Seattle or elsewhere?
I think he'll be a low-end starter. I think he'll be better than he was here, but not by a ton. Like, I'd be very surprised if he ended up being a franchise quarterback, top 15 type guy. But I think, look, to go out with all of the things working against him last year, whether it's the O-line or play calling or the coordinator and the head coach relationship, whatever you want to say, and to post 4,000 yards and 20-plus touchdowns, isn't nothing in the National Football League. You look at his December, and I was looking at this the other day. I mean, he fell off massively. It was kind of gross toward the end where he got benched just about every week for Brissett and would have obviously finished the season on the bench if Brissett doesn't go down. But I think it was a good trade for Seattle to kind of kick the tires in a better situation. But Washington did what they should have done. He's got major flaws that aren't going to be corrected, and they've got an opportunity in the top two to get a superstar.
Last one. What else do they have to get in the draft other than a left tackle?
Corner is a bigger need for me, Kevin, than people are talking about. Now, this is going to come down to how do they view the young corners that were drafted last year. And by the way, what an indictment on the previous regime after they took corners rounds 1 and 2 that I'm sitting here saying it's a major need. But do they look at Emmanuel Forbes and say, I really like this guy in this defense, the way we're going to coach him up, because we're not high school football coaches from California who know Jack Del Rio. We're going to make this
there
work.
There was one of those.
There has been one. Yeah. It has happened before. But Benjamin St. Juste, who I like a lot, who's long and physical and I think is actually very much a Dan Quinn corner, he's their number one, playing against C.D. Lamb, playing against the best that the other team has to offer. And then you got Forbes out on the other boundary playing against 1,000-yard receivers, and I'd imagine Quan Martin in the slot, who came on in the second half of last year. But they really, for you know, the names that they threw at corner, or the couple of bucks they threw at the problem, Noah Igbinoghene and James Pierre from Pittsburgh, like, they haven't really addressed it. So I think somewhere in the top 75, they probably have to add talent to the corner room.
Good job. Appreciate you doing this. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate you, Kevin, and I'll be listening on Friday night, man. It'll be fun.
And I will be listening on Thursday night when Grant and Danny host the first night. Look at that. Look, it's just, it's kumbaya between the two stations, so much more so than it used to be. Love Grant and Danny. Great job. Up next, Denton's News. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and theteam980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.